My name is Kay Edley, and I support public radio. Public radio is important to everyone because of the exchange of ideas and the diversity of ideas. I believe in public radio. I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Ukraine for about 2.5 years, and media is censored in Ukraine and also in some of the former Soviet Union countries, and so I believe very strongly in public radio. I support public radio, yes, indeed I do, because supporting public radio makes a difference.
Make your gift at WVXU.org or WMUB.org, or you can call 513-419-7155. More than 200,000 people tune to 91.7 and 88.5 every week. So if you and everyone who listens make a contribution every year, we can easily sustain and grow this service. 513-419-7155, or you can give online at WVXU.org or WMUB.org. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coffee is one of the top traded commodities worldwide. It's especially important as an export crop to developing countries, where 90% of the world's coffee production takes place. Coffee growers are facing increasing challenges from pests to changing weather patterns, but advances in farming and the recent sequencing of coffee genomes could give them a boost in production and crop quality. Joining us to discuss the coffee industry, recent challenges and changes to growing and processing coffee beans, Miami University Department of History Professor Emeritus and owner of the Oxford Coffee Company, Dr. Robert Thurston. He also edited the book, Coffee, A Comprehensive Guide to the Bean, the Beverage, and the Industry. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Bob, good to see you again.
Thanks, Mark. It's great to be here.
Am I correct in saying that coffee is the most popular drink in the world? At least that's my sense, is it?
I think water might be.
Water might be. And water is more of a necessity for survival.
Yeah. But after that, I honestly don't know whether beer, for example, would outrank coffee or not. But certainly among beverages that have any psychoactive qualities, coffee's right up there. You know, more than cola, which has mild psychoactive properties, and more so more than tea,
less caffeine.
More than tea. I see that by the latest information I could find, globally, some 2.25 billion cups of coffee are consumed every day. So it's
2.25 billion cups per day.
Per day.
I want to make sure I heard the per day part right.
Per day.
That's astounding.
Right.
What do you think makes it so popular?
Well, it's really been a sociable and social drink for a long time. The first English coffee houses around 1660, for example, were great meeting places where you could come and do business, hear the latest news, exchange ideas, meet different people, and stay sober, by the way, instead of having to drink ale or beer for hours. And so in those, they were often called penny universities because for a penny, you could sit there and drink coffee, which must have been lousy, lousy stuff. They just boiled it in a big iron cauldron over an open
Not
fire.
Not the best way to brew coffee.
Yeah, it must have been disgusting. But anyway, it was new, and the coffee houses catered to all classes of society. So we have a kind of continuum from that all the way to even Starbucks and the independent coffee houses today. I think that's one big reason. But it improves. There are lots of tests and experiments that show that it improves your ability to play chess, if you can play in the first place, or fly an airplane, or do arithmetic, mental exercises, that sort of thing. So it's been called the think drink. It helps with cognition and problem solving too.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you about there's always that debate that goes on as far as health benefits. It seems to go back and forth. You'll hear people who swear up and down, yeah, coffee's a beneficial drink, and then you'll hear people say, nah, all that's wrong. What's your position on the health benefits of coffee?
Well, the latest research that I've seen for years now is almost entirely positive, that drinking coffee helps you live longer. It helps ward off heart disease, type 2 diabetes, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, some types of cancer, even skin cancer. There was a massive study that appeared in the New England Journal of Medicine in 2012, for example, Harvard Health Bulletin. You can find a lot more of that type of organization on our website, by the way, oxfordcoffee.com. We try to keep a file up to date of material on coffee and health, but it almost appears to be a kind of wonder drug now, seriously. And the maximum benefit, I hate to say this in a way, is drinking 4 or 5 cups of coffee a day. All the studies show that. So that sounds like a lot of coffee, but that's where the biggest benefits are.
Well, I was going to ask if does decaf have the same benefits as caffeinate? Really?
No, it doesn't. And of course, the caffeine is not entirely gone from decaf. And just as a side note, you can't ever be sure how much caffeine is left in decaffeinated coffee. Various studies have shown that the amount of caffeine in decaf will vary a lot. But the biggest benefits are not only from coffee that has caffeine, but also from filtered coffee. That is, that passes through a metal or preferably a paper filter. So not espresso, not French press coffee. Sorry if you love that kind of coffee. But in terms of health benefits, it's filtered coffee that really does the trick.
So assistant producer Belinda Kai and myself, we both want to know this because we both have to drink decaf. We just can't handle the caffeinated stuff. Is there any way to drink caffeinated without driving yourself over the edge? I mean,
you can.
I'd like those health benefits, to be quite honest, but can't.
Sure. Well, it may be that some heavier bodied coffees like Sumatran would be easier for you to deal with. And there are, you might try darker roast coffee, caffeinated regular coffee. There's a kind of an old idea that the darker the roast, the more caffeine is burned off in the roasting process. And that doesn't seem to be true generally, or at least there's a lot of debate in this in and about the studies, but still you might try a darker roast, heavier bodied coffee like Sumatran and see if that agrees with you better.
Okay. So Bob, what are the challenges that coffee growers are facing these days? It sounds like they just keep increasing.
They really do. Climate change, temperature increases in the last few years in parts of Colombia, which is a big producer. The temperature has gone up on average 1 or 2 degrees centigrade, 4 or 5 degrees Fahrenheit, in critical parts of the growing cycle. So this is true all over Central America especially, and it means that a couple of things have gotten worse. One, coffee rust disease has killed a lot of plants, especially 3 years ago. About 40% of the crop was lost in Central America. And an insect called the coffee berry borer, or broca in Spanish, has reproduced a lot faster, has spread all through the world, now even in Hawaii, and it has gone up in altitude among coffee trees too. So there are lots and lots of experiments to try to find varieties or produce new varieties of coffee that are resistant to those diseases and pests, and also to drought. There's a serious drought in parts of Brazil this past season. So the experiments are often in trying to cross the better variety of coffee, Arabica, with the tougher stuff, Robusta, which just doesn't taste as good. So far, the results are not great because you can get a tougher plant, but still the taste is not so great. What's happening now, you mentioned the sequencing of the genome. Both Robusta and Arabica have now had their genomes sequenced just very within the last couple of weeks.
And this is out there publicly, too, as I understand it. This information's public information now.
Yes, and it will spread, right, and it will spread very quickly. Information will spread around the world. And that opens the door to, whether you like it or not, whether you fear GMO, genetically modified organisms or not, this opens the door to genetic modification of coffee. And I know a lot of people hate that idea, but for farmers that are struggling with all these diseases and temperature change, this could be a real lifesaver. The other thing that's happening that is also important is that new sources of coffee production are coming online. East Timor in the area of Indonesia, Thailand, and parts of Africa, Democratic Republic of Congo are producing more Arabica than ever. So at the same time that we see many, many problems, we're seeing a kind of a glut of coffee on the world market, and that's keeping the price of coffee quite low.
I have to back up, too, for a minute here, Bob, and just mention that we were talking about the health benefits of coffee mm-hmm. earlier. We certainly, if you've sworn off coffee for health reasons, we're not suggesting that you immediately jump back into drinking coffee.
And I'm not that kind of doctor.
Right, so. Right. You better talk to your doctor about
Absolutely.
That one before you
yeah.
do it.
But, yeah, and if you have any problems with high blood pressure, especially, you should be very careful. And
yeah, that's
really
my
consult.
Reason I drink decaf. So,
okay,
yeah,
right.
Exactly. Be careful with that. You're talking about new sources of coffee that are they're starting to come online. Are these countries that are starting to come online, are they looking at coffee as a way to help them recover from some type of disaster, war, boost the economy? Is that how they view it?
Yes, this is absolutely what has happened in Rwanda, for example, after the genocide there of the mid-90s. There's a big program or several programs to put widows on the land, growing coffee, processing coffee, and marketing it effectively. So this has been very, very helpful in trying to put a country back together. A small country, but one that suffered terribly in the civil wars and genocide of the 1990s. In the case of Vietnam, after our war in Vietnam, the government decided to really promote the agriculture of coffee in the country, and that has helped a lot to boost the economy of Vietnam in general. It's now Vietnam became the second largest producer in the world by the late 1990s, going almost from zero to 60, from very little production to huge production by the end of the 1990s. Now, that has caused some other problems in turn, but it has helped the Vietnamese economy quite a bit.
Now, I've been hearing about GIS farming, too.
Yeah.
What is that? How is that working in the coffee industry?
Well, the only place I know that it's used so far is Brazil. So we're talking about global information systems and the use of intensive mapping of a farm so that you find out if the soil in one place is low in nutrients and the soil in another place is high in nutrients. And this can vary in a small area of farmland at all. So there's intensive mapping of the soil for quality. And even from the air using drones and so on, you can check on individual plants. Do they need more something, potassium, nitrogen, whatever? Do they need more water? You can also, by the use of drones, check soil temperature to a depth of 6 inches. And this will make a lot of difference in terms of when you apply fertilizers, insecticides, pesticides. And by the way, this could be either conventional, so-called conventional synthetic insecticides and pesticides, or organic biosprays. So once you have all this information, and it costs a lot of money to do all this, this is not for the small farmers. So this is inherently, there's a problem here too, that the big farmers may really benefit from these systems because they have the money to invest in the equipment. So once you get it all set up and your farm is really mapped for soil, then you can, for example, run spraying trucks between the rows of coffee trees and set up the spray so that when you find plants, according to your system, your software, that need nutrients, the spray will automatically start. And it'll stop when you get to the plants that don't need the nutrients. So it's a way of making every bit of your land much more productive. And instead of just blanket spraying from the air, you're doing very precise spraying. And the hope is that this can reduce costs by as much as 30%. Now, obviously, everything is pretty highly automated, too.
So. But this is not for the small grower. This
no,
is going to, this
no,
is going to be something
no,
large growers are going to
yeah,
be using.
There are farms in Kenya that are very productive, but they're as small as even 1 acre, half an acre. Well, they're not going to have the equipment to do this. Maybe they could join in big co-ops, but still, that's very hard to do, hard to organize. So this is basically for very well-funded farms.
Well, how does the price of coffee change as it goes up that supply chain, as it goes up that line?
Well, it it can change dramatically, and most of the price of a cup of coffee is added once it gets to the consuming country. Most coffee that's shipped around the world comes in the form of green coffee, that we call it green. The Spanish call it golden, but anyway, it's unroasted coffee. So in my store, we get bags of unroasted coffee, 60 kilos or 132 pounds is the standard size. And then we roast it. So let's say we pay $3 a pound for the coffee. If we are selling it wholesale, we're going to at least double that price. We sell it to a cafe, a restaurant, a grocery store. If we sell it ourselves in the store and we grind it and make it into cups of coffee, it may be worth more like $10 a pound. But I do want you to be aware that the profit margins are not huge at every step of the way. I think the critical part, the part that many, many people are concerned with, is how do the farmers get more money into their pockets? And that, by the way, will help with a number of things, just their own health and well-being, obviously, their standard of living, and also to the extent that we get more money into farmers' pockets, they're more likely to stay on the land and not move in Nicaragua, let's say, to a city like Managua, or in Mexico to Mexico City. And so we can hope to hold back that kind of tide of immigration and even some undocumented immigration into the United States.
So are there any new methods of brewing that are out there?
Well, there are all sorts of, let's say, twists on old styles of brewing. In particular, the siphon pot a vacuum pot, has become very popular. It's a very showy kind of thing where you put you have two vessels of glass, and you put the coffee in the upper vessel and heat up water in the bottom one, and it creates a kind of suction effect. It's almost magic to me, I must say. It sucks the water up into the top, and then makes the coffee, and then you allow it to drain back into the bottom vessel. But there are all sorts of cold brew with nitrogen, for example.
Cold brew with nitrogen.
You get a foamy kind of effect on the top of the cold brewed coffee. It's not entirely a gimmick. You can get some nice tastes out of that sort of thing.
And you're saying these are just kind of twists on old types of brewing.
Well, the vacuum pot goes back to the early 19th century, 1830s, if I'm not mistaken. And so, and the Melita type dripper goes back to the early 1900s. So we're not an espresso. It depends. Very early 1900s, but true espresso with crema, that foam on the top, it's only 1947. So people are always looking, AeroPress, but that's already 10 or 12 years old, which is a combination of infusion and then pressure to push the coffee through a filter. So there are some new ideas, but mostly people are working like crazy to improve existing methods, I think.
So from your professional standpoint, what do you think is the best way to brew coffee?
I prefer the simplest method. If you like espresso, then you've got to have a serious espresso machine that's capable of producing 9 bars, that is 9 times the pressure of air at sea level, to push the water through the coffee and make yourself a nice cup of espresso. But I prefer using a paper filter, grinding the coffee pretty fine, wetting the filter first, put the grounds in the – throw that away, that water away, put the grounds in the filter, wet them, let them outgas a little bit, get rid of tastes and gases you don't need, and then pour the rest of the water on. So it takes a little bit of effort, a little bit of fanaticism maybe, but it's simple. Then you can, by the way, compost the grounds and the paper filters together, and it makes a nice soil amendment. So there's no real waste there.
Yeah. And real quickly, Bob, despite all the challenges the coffee industry has been facing, are you optimistic about the future for this?
Yes, but I think there's going to be a shakeout. There is a shakeout underway. And with things like the geospatial farming that we were discussing, that's going to make certain big farms much more productive. And it's going to make it harder for the little guys to make a living. I think what's got to happen and is happening is more and more attention to biodiversity, diversification of crops on the small farms, grow flowers, grow bananas, grow plantains, grow hardwoods, along with the coffee. Those, the small guys have to have some other sources of income really to make it, and they have to make sure their coffee is of very high quality.
Bob, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Oh, thank
you,
Mark.
Really appreciate it. Miami University Department of History Professor Emeritus and owner of the Oxford Coffee Company, Dr. Robert Thurston. He also edited the book, Coffee, A Comprehensive Guide to the Bean, the Beverage, and the Industry. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. Pete Reitmeier was the producer for today's show. Belinda Kai was the assistant producer. Dave Shermer was the technical director. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, coming up next on 91.7 WVXU. The controversy over crowd sizes at President Trump's inauguration and his claim that millions of illegal votes were cast during the election have been generating as much news as the many executive orders he's already signed. On the next Cincinnati Edition, political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson join us for a look at the first week of the Trump presidency. That's Cincinnati Edition, Thursday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.